Please. Okay. We're on step 7. That's what they tell me. And one of my favorite steps. And I want you all to stick around for about 28 years so you can get used to this step. You need to get used to this step. It's a rough one. So my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's good to be here. I've got 3 books open before me. I've got the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. But once we got a name, published in 1939. AA started in 19... Now listen, we all have different ways of doing this. I've been sober for a little over 28 years. Almost, what, 3 decades. I've been doing this stuff for a long time. Not as long as my sponsor. He's got 54 years. But I've been doing this stuff. And, you know, it's changed. I've changed. My story's changed. You know, you hang around here for a long period of time. Jesus, I should hope you should change. Man, I should hope you should change. But the bottom line is I've changed the way I approach this thing. Every meeting's a little bit different, Mike. And so I have some thoughts in step 7 I want to throw out to you. You know, no step meeting is definitive or comprehensive or covers everything. Hey, listen, this is the way I figure. This is jot upon jot. You know, this is like line upon line. This is the deal that you show up for 28 years to meetings, and if you walk out of a meeting, you get like one pebble, you know, in the mosaic. That's what you're going to get. Sometimes you just walk out and you don't think you got nothing, and you're driving home and you get like one thought. You know, and thought upon thought, line upon line. So I'm just going to throw some stuff out there. I know from experience that if there's 40 people in this room, there's 40 different meetings going on. There's 40 people in 40 different places. There's 40 people hearing 40 different things. I mean, I don't know how many times I've had guys come up to me and thank me for helping them out by saying something in an AA meeting, which I didn't say, which I immediately take credit for anyway. You know what I mean? Well, because it's like close enough for government work. You know what I mean? They'll say something that has meaning to them, which I know is taken from something I said, but it's not really exactly what I said. It may not have even been the meaning I said it, but they took it in and they heard it because the stuff that was going on in their lives, it's like a milkshake. You don't know. Whatever goes into your mind, whatever's going on there, whatever your experience is, it mixes up with your deal. It's a whole different deal. But you know something? If you have a relationship with God, or you want a relationship with God, or you want Him bad enough, He shows up, He does the magic, He does the changing. What does it say in the promises? We finally recognize that He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. What does it say in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the one we all agree on? It says, see to it that your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. What does it say in this book? What does it say in this book on page 29? It says this. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual. That's what I would be, an individual. You get it? I'm just a guy in AA. Each individual. In the personal stories, I'm going to tell you a little personal testimony, experience, and my opinions based upon my experience in AA. You know the old story. My sponsor used to say, well, the man with experience meets a man with money. The man with experience will walk away with the money. The man with the money will walk away with an experience, right? You know, so you see, we all come in here with a lot of opinions. A guy with 1 hour has an opinion, and if you're an alcoholic, they're strongly held opinion. You're willing to fight for him. You know, you don't understand. Who do you think you are? A guy who just got out of jail has an opinion. But you know, there are opinions by guys with 2 days, 3 weeks, and there are opinions of guys with 28 years and 30 years. You know what I mean? And I'd like to think that my opinions are based upon experience of watching other people go in and out and about my own personal experience. And so it says each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language. This is my language. You don't like it? It's fine. When you get up here, you'll talk about your language. And from his own point of view, this is my point of view. The way he established his relationship with God. That's what an AA story is about. If you're not talking, you can tell me a drunk log. You got drunk. You got every AA drunk log is the same. Listen, I love drunk logs. It's good for new people. You know, they want to hear about, they can hear about a guy falling down, getting drunk, you know, not paying child support, all that sort of stuff. We can all identify. But the bottom line is, I heard those stories at the Holiday Inn Lounge, at the Alibi Lounge. You can hear those. You don't have to be an AA to hear drunk logs. You can go to a bar and hear drunk logs. A is not about the problem and drunk. A is about the solution. The only solution in AA is about finding God and finding a relationship with God. That's why it says each alcoholic in his own story tells his own way how he found his real. That's why it says burn the idea into each mind of the alcoholic that he can get well regardless of anything. As long as he trusts in God and clean house. That's why it says, job or no job, wife or no wife. You know, you can't stay sober unless you have a relationship with God. You tell me that's not true. You know what you're telling? You can sincerely believe it's not true, but you know what that is? That's just your opinion. Why should I rely on your opinion? Your opinion never got you anywhere anyway. Why should I trust an alcoholic and his opinion? I'll trust what they say in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Since only 0.5% stay sober for more than 20 years. 1 in 200. I've seen them drink at 10, at 15, at 20, at 20 weeks. They're all geniuses. All brilliant. You know? They just can't stay sober. So I've got here in front of me, lest somebody report me to New York, the book Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'm going to quote liberal in front, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. Book was written in 1939, AA, book, Alcoholics Anonymous. AA started in 1935. I want you to listen to this. Big book written in 1939. AA started in 1935. Do we have any mathematicians out there? What's the difference between 35 and 39? 4 years. AA was around and meeting under a different name for 4 years before they wrote the book. You get it? So you understand, when they say in the book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They're talking about the path they took for the first 4 years. Does everybody understand that? Now, if you're trying to figure out what that path is, you need to understand that the path did not include, I say this without any fear of contradiction, did not include reading the big book. You get it? Now, if you don't get that, I can't do any better than this. You really have to go somewhere else for like remedial training. You understand, when they wrote this in 35 and said, do what we did and you'll get what we got. What they did had nothing to do with reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You get that? Yes. Now, does anybody know what the first meeting was? Now, the first meeting that they had in AA was one done by Dr. Bob. You can look it up in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. The guy, he chaired it. And what was the meeting on? Does anybody know what the meeting was on? He opened up the Bible. Because that's what they were reading at meetings. That was before we got cool. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And he read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. That was what the meeting was about. And all the meetings were about the Bible or biblical sources for the first 4 years. Somehow they just plummeted. Nothing wrong with treatment centers. They piled in a lot of alcoholics, a lot of treatment centers, a lot of stuff in here. A lot of people didn't want to hear about God. And all of a sudden, we've sort of changed a little bit, but we've never really changed. The real deal has never really changed. The real deal has never really changed. It's never changed. You know what I mean? The fellowship tends to sink to the lowest common denominator. What alcoholics want to hear. The big book does not believe me what alcoholics want to hear. What alcoholics wanted to hear is what they think the big book is, which is a bunch of slogans and meetings and stuff like that. In my opinion. But we're gonna talk about a little bit about that and how that happens. In the 12 and 12, I also have the Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers. In the 12 and 12, the statement in chapter 1 is this. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. Now listen, there's a part in the big book that says we have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. That's the kind of sobriety I want. I want the sobriety they saw in the old timers when they were comfortable in their skin. Transparent. Didn't seem to be worried about what other people thought about them. Seemed to handle their lives okay. Seemed to have some sort of serenity. That's what I want. I don't want that nervous, sort of jittery, sort of pissed off, sort of anxious, anxiety ridden, envious, nervous sobriety. Always complaining about something. I want that different. I want the kind that I saw my sponsors had. That's why they were part of my way. But doesn't it say, isn't there a step before the step that says, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready. Then you're ready to take certain steps. Isn't that what it says? I mean, I quoted this wrong. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So you're not even ready to take certain steps until what? You want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it. So if you don't have a we, you're not even ready. According to the big book, you got to have a we. What's a we? You know, if I ask you, well, who is it? If I ask, no, not all of us are clay feet. You're going to see that in a second with Bill Wilson. If I ask you, well, what is it about A? What does it attract you to it? What are you looking at? And you say, well, I don't know. You're not ready. Because you don't have a we. You're not looking at something. There's not something before you that's saying, I wish I had that. I wish I had, why can't, you're not excited about something. You're not motivated. I mean, maybe this takes a little time. But if you don't have a we, then you know what it is? Then you're your we. And you're following you. I've never seen a guy that isn't following himself where he doesn't get drunk. Most of the guys I see that drink have 10, 20, 15, they're all loners. They're all out there. They can say they have a sponsor. They're not. They're just out, they're out by themselves. They're not sponsoring, nor are they sponsored. Nor are they part of a group. So here we have this book, and it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, whatever that is, his alcoholism, his sobriety will be precarious, which I think we all agree is not a really good thing. Right? Precarious sobriety. Of true happiness, everybody in here wants, oh, if I could only be, I just want to be happy. I just want to be happy. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. Now, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, I don't know about you, but if you're an alcoholic like me, I'd be interested in finding out what all the consequences were. What are they talking? Because I think they're talking about something more than just drinking. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure AA is really about drinking. Because I've been to thousands of AA meetings, I've sponsored hundreds of people, and I gotta tell you something, in the thousands of meetings I've been to all over the world, ain't nobody drinking. I don't think there's anybody drinking in here. As a matter of fact, most of the people don't even have a drinking problem. They got something else going on. They got a you don't understand and a yes butters and an if only and why me, you know, and they got a lot of other stuff going on. They got something going on with the thinking. You know, they all got that conversation going on that alcoholics have going on. You know that conversation? The conversation you've had going on ever since you were born. You know you're having a conversation. You don't even know you're having it. Most alcoholics don't even know they're involved in a conversation. They don't. You know that? Most alcoholics are so involved in the conversation, they don't even know they're in the conversation. You know the conversation that you're having with yourself. About you. About everything else. But it's all about you. You're conversing with yourself. You say something, and then you say something. You say something, and then you say something back. You say things like, you know, why is this? Why is that? Why does he have this? What is that? You know, it's a constant conversation. You know, let me tell you something. You ready for this? It's a bad conversation. You know, it doesn't make you feel good. It hurts you. See, that's why alcoholics don't like silence. That's why they always have to have a radio on or a TV on or a phone going on. Or they have to have something going because they can't stand silence, because when there's silence, all they have is their thoughts and their bad thoughts about themselves and other people. And they're only talking about themselves. It has nothing to do with stuff that's going on outside. It's stuff that's going on inside. So you're in that elevator, you're in that escalator, and you're saying things like, I'm a piece of shit, I'm an idiot, I'm stupid. Well, all the stuff that you say to yourself on these prolonged conversations, well, of course, you could stop the conversation, except that's the real problem with alcoholism, isn't it? You can't because you're addicted to it. See, because the alcohol is not a problem. The alcohol is but a symptom of the problem. It's not, when men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Isn't that what the book says? That we're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience a sense of ease or comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. I mean, they're just uncomfortable in their skin. It doesn't matter. Money, no, hey, listen. You chase, like me, for years, those things that they map out in the seventh step that you are absolutely sure would make you happy. A lot of them you get, and they never work. You get the girl, it never works. You get the guy, it never works. You get the money, it never works. You get the car, it never works. You chase those things and you put them together and they have never, you're 40, you're 50, you're 60 years old and they have, you've gotten them and you've put them together 1,000 times and they've never, ever satisfied you. They've never worked. That's why the Michael Jacksons and the Britney Spears and everybody in the world that you see that get this stuff together. You see people who are alcoholics and they don't work. And so after they don't work for the 10,000th time, and by the way, you know why you're chasing them. because of that guy you're having a conversation with. Yeah, you're having a conversation with a guy saying, get that, do that. Why me? Why does he have that? I look like, you know, you got this conversation. So you, after the 10 millionth time, after the 15th divorce, you know what I mean? After the 10 millionth time, you've changed these habits, you know what you do at 10 million and number one? You go out and chase it again, thinking this time it's going to work. If you're lucky, you get bad enough, and you get low enough, and you get crushed, and you get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a nanosecond, God has your attention, and you're ready, willing, and able, until you get a few bucks together, and then you go back to your old way of thinking, because you're addicted to the conversation, because you can't get rid of you. Because you is all you got. And the only way, you know what it says in the Bible? It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our problems. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. What is that if it isn't just thinking about yourself all the time? Constantly involved in thinking about yourself, examining yourself, worrying about yourself, anxiety about yourself, comparing yourself. Selfishness, self-centeredness. 1,000 forms. A fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on toes of others, they retaliate. Usually we don't think for no reason, but it's usually something in the past we've done. He says, so an alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot, though he what? Usually doesn't think so. We talked about this, which means what? Which means you're delusional. As smart as you are, there are things going on that you don't see. Or you see things that aren't there. That's why I say the wrongdoings of others fancy the real. It can be imaginary shit. We can get all mad and destroy relations over fanciful imaginary crap. It says, the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. That means, you are like this, but you don't think you're like this. That's the screwy part. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. And the problem is, you got all sorts of consequences, whatever they are, and you don't think so. That's what we talked about last week. You're a moose, but you think you're a penguin. You're a moose, but you're sure you're a penguin. But you're a moose. So you do penguin things because you think you're a penguin, but you're really a moose. So you're always failing, but you can't understand why you're failing. That's what it says. Alcoholic self, it says, this isn't me. Listen, if you don't like what I'm saying, you need to write New York. Tell them there's some crazy guy at the South Dade Room that's quoting from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you haven't heard this before, or ever, nobody's ever talked to you about this before, it's because you're in the Rotary Club. You're not even in AA. You walked into some club room and you don't even know what you're involved in. It says, above everything, we must get rid of self. We must or it kills us. It doesn't say we must get rid of alcohol. Now you gotta get rid of alcohol. You don't even have a shot. But it says we must get rid of self. We must get rid of those voices. We must get rid of that conversation. The thinking. Man, I couldn't imagine. 9 years sober, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't get rid of the thinking. Wake up 3 in the morning with the thinking. 7 o'clock in the morning with the thinking. 5 o'clock in the afternoon with the thinking. All bad crap about me and other people. You know? The thinking that when am I gonna ever stop thinking? When is it ever gonna be okay? I just knew it was never gonna be okay. And yet I'd see these guys, part of my week. They looked like they were okay. When was it? 15 years? 20 years? When does it happen? You know, where I had a mind, it was like Velcro. There wasn't a thought in the universe that didn't stick like glue. It was like super glue. I couldn't get rid of them. You ever get like, syrup on your hand? You know, and you know when it gets sticky and you just can't get it off. You gotta go into the sink or something. That was like thoughts with me. My whole day, I collected just thoughts, imaginary thoughts from here, people that did. I just couldn't, it was all just a jumble. I couldn't do it. You know, and one day I woke up, now it's real bad. Now it's like Teflon mind. I can't even, that's a real problem, but it's a good one. But nothing sticks. They just sort of flop off, you know what I mean? I've determined that there's a possibility that's early Alzheimer's. But I figure if it feels good, you know what I mean? What the heck? So here we go. Here we are in the family. So let's go through this thing right now. It says, above all, we must get rid of this. We must, or it kills us. And there very often seems no way of getting rid of it on our own power. We had to have God's help. We had to have God's help. There seemed no way of getting, we had to have God's help. That's why it says in the promises, he's doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. The whole promise, the whole book is about, and that's why it says right here, we in turn saw the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. And then, of course, it goes through that whole darn thing about God either is or he isn't. What was our answer to be? That chapter of the Gnostics, you know, a mere code of morals, better philosophy of life. If our brain could get us out of this, you know, we wouldn't even need this. But what happened was our brain, our morals, our philosophies, good orderly direction, all that stuff, never worked for us. The needed power was there. We had to find the power greater in ourselves that we could latch onto and have faith with, have faith in. And therefore, we wrote a book where we have to talk about God. And that's when the alcoholics go crazy, because they don't want to hear that crap. Because they're addicted to me and the stuff and the girls and the guys and the sex and the cars and the deal. And they don't want anybody raining on their parade. It can't be true. It can't be true. And yet it says in here, eventually we lose our prejudice even against organized religion. When you hear people putting down religion in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's not AA. Because in AA, we lose prejudice. We get to see where religious people are right. As a matter of fact, we encourage church membership and synagogue membership in here. We encourage. That's why when we get to the 11th step, we finally establish a relationship with God, and the whole thing is about getting even closer to Him. Because that's what's going to do the transformation. That's why Dr. Young said to Roland Hassett when he graduated, Roland Hassett said, "Now knowing the inner workings of my own mind, I'm convinced that drinking was impossible. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a few weeks." Roland was just as smart as everybody in this room. He went up to Dr. Young. He says, "What's wrong?" He says, "Man, I got nothing. I can't help you. I'm a doctor. I can't help you. I'm the world famous psychiatrist. I can't help you." He says, "Is there no hope?" He says, "Hey, here and there, once in a while, people get better." He says, "We call these things phenomena. We can't explain them, like miracles." He says, "Ideas, emotions, the attitudes, which are the guiding forces of these men's lives, are suddenly cast one side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. I'm trying to do this with you. I've never been successful with a person of your ilk, which is people like us." So, Bill Wilson is in Can't Get Sober. Now most people hold Bill Wilson in high esteem. I hold him in high esteem. I like the guy. You know what I mean? Good guy. You know what I mean? Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob. I'm going to tell you a little story about Bill Wilson. I'm going to show you a little something about this deal. Give you a little something to think about, chew on. If you don't get anything out of this. You know why I like Bill Wilson? Because he was an alkie. If it was up to Bill Wilson, the only reason you're here is because of God. The only reason you're sober is because of God. If it was up to Bill Wilson, this book wouldn't have been written, and you'd all be drunk. Now I'm going to make a statement. If it was up to Bill Wilson, everybody in here, including him, would be drunk, and the book Alcoholics Anonymous would have never been written. So next time you start thinking that Bill Wilson had something to do with this, and this isn't a God thing, understand, if it was up to Bill, we would all be drunk and dead, and the book would not have been written. I'm going to prove it to you right now with our literature. Here's Bill Wilson, and it'll give you a little understanding about the consequences. You know what I said? In Listen and Told Alcohol, accept his alcoholism and the consequences, you know, his pride. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this disease that you may not have thought of. So you can see it in yourself, because if you understand a little bit about Bill Wilson, and you understand a little bit about the consequences of the disease, you're going to understand a little bit more about yourself and why you think the way you think and what's really going on here. And maybe you'll be able to watch out for it and understand what's going on. So here's the deal. Bill Wilson, Ron Page, he's in the hospital. This is in Bill's story, okay? I'm going to read straight from Bill's story. He's drunk for like the last time. He can't get sober. His life is ruined, okay? "Thus I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want Him enough. At long last I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view." This is page 12, 13, and 14. He goes through a couple things, then he says, "There I humbly offered myself to God." He says, "At the hospital I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. Okay, now listen. There I humbly offered myself to God. Go ahead, guys, there's a seat somewhere. Back there. Back there, there's a seat. There you go. Okay? Now listen. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. Placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. This is Bill Wilson. Now he's writing this. He's writing his testimony 4 years sober. You understand, the book Alcoholics Anonymous is published in 1939. This is before the first chapter. This is Bill Wilson, 4 years sober, telling you what saved his ass 4 years prior to that time. Does everybody understand that? 4 years prior to that time, before this book, this is Bill Wilson saying, this is my testimony, this is what saved me. Writing out for everybody to see for posterity, being as honest as he can, okay? This is what he says. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing without him, and every time I say him, or the Father, anything, remember it's a capital H, without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have, yes, he used the word sins, and became willing to have my newfound friend, that's a capital F, take them away, root and branch. I have not had a drink since. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with the problems and deficiencies. We made a list of people I had hurt toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. I was to test my thinking by a new God consciousness. Within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I don't know if you ever read the thing in, I don't know if it's Corinthians or Romans, it says to the natural man, these things are craziness. To logical thinkers, faith is craziness. The people that base their life on logic, you know, if I get money, if I get, these things are craziness. God is craziness. It doesn't add up 2 and 2 plus 4. The only thing that adds up is you see people that believe in God do magnificent things. Incredible things. The effects add up. It says, common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request for my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter into a new relationship. There's that word again, with my creator. I guess it could be a light bulb if you think you were created by a light bulb. If you think that's what he's talking about. Then I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential elements. With the essential, that means absolutely necessary elements. Now here we go. His last, I want you to listen to this. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. Now here's the deal. Bill Wilson's in the hospital. I'm going to give you a little insight in this story about what I'm about to read. And you'll understand a little bit more about Bill Wilson, this disease, and the real problem that you have. The real problem that you have. He's in the hospital. He's depressed. He's desperate. He's on his last legs. He's turning his life over to God. The way the book maps it out in both is he yells out, if there is a God, let me see you now. This is what he writes. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. Now, unless you believe he's lying, this is his testimony. There was a sense of victory, followed by a peace and serenity I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though a great, clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. As a matter of fact, what he actually said in the literature is that the room lit up. He had a spiritual experience. Later on, he had to say, well, you don't, because not everybody was having this spiritual experience. He had to say, well, it could be the educational variety. But Bill Wilson had a spiritual experience. He said the room lit up. He felt like a spiritual wind. As a matter of fact, the statement he said out of his mouth was, so this is the God of the prophets. He calls in the doctor. He says, for a moment I was alarmed. I called my friend, the doctor, to ask if I was still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head. Something has happened to you. I don't understand it, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who have such experiences. He knows that they are real. He had a road to Damascus experience with God. Now, he wrote this when he was 4 years sober. When he was 4 years sober, he was the one who wrote all this stuff about God. He put it in this book all about God. As a matter of fact, every meeting you go to, they say, there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Every meeting you go to, it says, if you're an alcoholic, his testimony in this chapter proves to you, you are going to be convinced that you're an alcoholic and you can't manage your own life. No human power can do it, but God couldn't. What if he was sought? And then it says, being convinced, you're now at step three. In this book, in Bill Dotson's story, when he was 4 years sober, when he was sick, as a matter of fact, when he was, he talked, Bill Dotson, when Bill Dotson was just a few weeks sober, he talks about seeing Bill Wilson. Bill Dotson says in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program. I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. I remembered one day, a week or two after I'd come out of hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. Now here's this guy, he's 2 weeks sober. I used to do this all the time. I still do it from time to time. I used to go to these meetings. But these guys were doing the steps and I'd say, maybe this is the guy. You know, why can't I have what he, you know, looking to get something out of this that I didn't have. I knew at every meeting I went to that there was something I was missing. I knew there was something. No matter how good I thought, I knew there was something more. Just like him. Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, this is Bill Wilson talking, as he's reported, he says, Henrietta, he's talking about Henrietta Dotson. Henrietta, the Lord, he uses the word Lord, nobody corrected him and stood up and said, don't do that stuff, it's still in the book. He says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. Bill Dotson says, I thought, he's the third man on the bed, the man on the bed. He says, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful for me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. So, that's all a setup. That's not even important. Well, let me tell you what the important point is. By the way, none of this is about step 7. I'll get to step 7 in the last 3 minutes. But here's the deal. I'll solve that step 7 stuff. But listen, here's the deal. Don't worry about it. It's only an A. Here's the deal. So, you understand, according to our literature, this is the deal. Bill Wilson can't stop drinking. He's a hopeless, hapless drunk. He's tried everything. He can't do it. He's done everything. He can't do it. He goes into the hospital. Okay? He says, God, please help me. If there is a God, help me now. His room lights up. He feels a great spiritual wind blow through him. He says, so this is the God of the prophets. He calls in the doctor. He says, I think I'm going insane. He tells him what's happening. I see. I feel it. I was moved. The doctor says, listen, I have no idea what happened to you. Just like with the Dr. Young thing, he says, but hang on to it. Anything is better than what you got. And then he says, later on, this is our testimony book, he sees many men who have had this kind of experience. He says, they are absolutely real. So Bill Wilson is talking in this book about how God did for him what he couldn't do for himself. It came to him incredibly. You know what I mean? This incredible God experience. 4 years later, he's writing all about it in the big book of alcohol. It's all over on every page of the big book. He's writing his testimony. Bill Wilson's talking about it. It's all over the big book. God, 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 God. Right? This is the book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is page 159. The first few meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that Bill Wilson was involved in. Okay? This is Bill Wilson and Henrietta Seibling. Henrietta Seibling was the one that led Bill Wilson to Dr. Bob Smith, where she's talking about Bill's attitude. This is about 6 or 7 months after his room lit up. This is Bill Wilson, our hero. Our hero, Mr. AA, 6 months after his room lit up. You understand? The room lit up. He was a great spiritual wind. He was lifted up. He calls the doctor. He says, what's going on? If this is the God of Spirit. This is 6 months after, you know, the Red Sea parted. You know that story? The Red Sea parts, they go across. And then Moses disappears and they say, let's go back to Egypt. What have you done for me lately? This is human nature. You want to know why people come in here saying, I'm never going to drink, I've got this thing, and then 6 months later, they're looking for the exit. 6 months. Now he's sober. He hasn't had a drink. The room lit up. Bill Wilson. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, this is our hero, 6 months sober, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. This is Bill Wilson, 6 months sober, after the room lit up, and that's his whole experience. Remember, saying, I don't think we should mention this guy. He's already throwing God under the bus. He's already, 6 months later, he's throwing God, and you know why? He's throwing God under the bus. Because one of the consequences, you know those consequences, unless you accept of being an alcoholic, is worrying incredibly what other people think about you. You see, the reason they have in the promises, the new freedom and new happiness, the reason they include on these those promises, fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you, is because you know how incredibly fearful alcoholics are in projection about not only economic insecurity, which they tie into what people think about them. That's why we have to have things and get, hey, listen, I am the number one guy in charging up things on credit cards, buying things with money I don't need, with money I don't have to impress people I don't even like. So I know what it's like to be an alcoholic and vain and live your whole life trying to puff yourself up and handle the superficial stuff so that people would like you because your whole life is devoted to what do you think they thought about me. I know what that kind of life is. Thinking that if they only think about you, if they only love you, if they only do this, and God forbid, the greatest nightmare of an alcoholic is if they're talking about you bad behind your back. God forbid. That's worth about sleepless nights right there. So I understand how we prostitute ourselves, and we'll do anything. That's why alcoholics say, when they come to Alcoholics Anonymous, what do I say if they ask me what I want to drink? They need a cover story. I mean, if you had a brain in your head, if you lost it, and somebody asked you what you want to drink, you'd punch them. You know what I mean? You'd say, go to hell. But we need a story, because I would rather drink, you understand, and destroy myself and my wife and my kids, than risk the possibility that you might think I'm goofy or uncool or not like me. Sounds crazy, but alcoholics are crazy. It's a serious disease. If you don't understand, that's part of the consequences. Part of the consequence of this disease is you walk out in the real world after the light goes on, after the room lights up, after the wind blows through, after you're saved, you walk out in the real world and you look around and you realize that people don't want to hear this stuff. So you throw God under the bus. Because you'd rather have the approval of people rather than the approval of God. And besides, you can't really see God, but you can see people. And you're so, and your ego is so fragile and so weak that you judge yourself and who you are basically through the eyes of others. It doesn't matter what you really think about yourself. You determine about who you are and how you are based upon whether a girl likes you or a guy likes you or somebody else. Your whole context on whether you're worthwhile or worthless is based upon how other people think about you. I'm not talking about you guys, because I can tell you're a cut above most alcoholics. You understand what I'm saying? I don't want you to get offended. I can tell that you guys are like on top of your game. I'm talking about like down to the car room, the way they are down there. So, you understand, Bill Wilson, who the white light, is already saying, this is what he's saying. In the early days, you recall, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God, or God. He's already throwing him on the bus. This is what Henrietta Seibling says to him. It says, well, we're not out to please the alcoholics. They have been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be the Rotary Club or something like that. because God is your only source of power. Then it says, finally, Bill Wilson agreed. Finally, Bill Wilson agreed. And because he agreed with that, you understand, if it was up to Bill, if Bill Wilson had to turn to some of the goofballs that are in AA today and said, I don't think we should talk so much about God, they would say back to him something like, yeah, I think you're right, that's a bunch of bullshit, and we wouldn't have this book, and we wouldn't have 90% of stuff in here, and none of you guys would be sober, and neither would Bill Wilson. But he happened to turn to somebody right there who was there, miraculously placed there, who said, who basically said, are you crazy? And every alcoholic that walks in the AA, no matter what he sees of God and what miracles happen in their life, reaches a point in time where the thought comes to him, I don't think I should talk or think so much about God. And he turns to his right and left, and depending upon who's there, that's which direction they're going. And AA is so populated with people right now that'll tell you you're right. We shouldn't. You understand what I'm saying? That unless you understand this crap, and your weakness, and what's going on in your mind, your sobriety is going to be a flip of the coin based upon who you're sitting next to and who you're listening to when you start thinking those thoughts. And you'll be drunk in 6 months or 6 years and you won't even know why. It's because one day you had that thought and you weren't sitting next to Henrietta who said to you, or a sponsor who said, are you crazy? Are you crazy? You were sitting to somebody who agreed with you. Because you wanted some of the same guys that are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the same guys you were sitting next to in the bar. So a lot has to do with who you hang around. The fellowship. I guess that's why they have a thing, if you want what we have, on a willing to go to any length. You see, if you wanted what Bill Wilson had, you'd be hanging around the guy who was saying, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. You see, the reason Bill Dotson stayed sober is because he was hanging around Bill Wilson, who was saying things like, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. So he wasn't embarrassed or ashamed, which is probably why the big book says we never apologize for God. And so we get into this thing with, and so what does this have to do with step seven? Nothing. Except, we'll do this in 5 minutes. Step seven has to do with that one thing that I can't do. See, nobody can actually do step seven. Can't do step seven. Did you know that? It's the one step you can't do. There's probably a lot of steps you can't do, but step seven you definitely can. See, I don't know. I can't talk about step seven because in order to talk about step seven, it says, what does it say? What does step seven say? Where is it? Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. I don't know how to do it humbly. I don't know how to do it. Listen, I know how to do arrogant. I know how to do know-it-all. I know how to do go to hell. Who do you think you are? You don't understand. Yes, but that's a bunch of bullshit. Who does this guy? I don't know. As a matter of fact, if I say, you know something? I'm going to do this meeting today, guys, but listen to me. I've decided I'm going to be humble. I've already screwed it. You know what I mean? I can't say, you know, I think tomorrow I'll be humble. I mean, I don't know how to do humble. Now, I've done humble, but it wasn't because I was doing humble. You know, it was because humble was like done to me. If you're in here, you understand what I'm talking about. You see, I'll bet everybody in here has done humble. And I'll bet when you were doing humble, it was like, you didn't like mean to do humble. You understand what I'm saying? See, here's what I'm thinking. When you were at your best and your humblest, you weren't actually trying to do humble. Humble like sort of like just happened to you. You know what I mean? Like when you picked up that white chip, or you looked that guy in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. Or you got into that mode where you weren't talking so much and you were just listening. You know, when you weren't arguing. I'll bet that's because that was something that like sort of like happened to you. That had nothing to do with you, but something to do with you that put you in that deal at humble. And I'll bet as soon as you started feeling better, you found yourself like out of that deal. As a matter of fact, I'll bet, you know what my biggest problem? My biggest problem is the weller I get, the sicker I get. How do you do humble? It says here in step seven, it says, Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement, nor do we enter into debate with the many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. But we are sure, this is what I was talking about the mind, about thinking, but we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics, the formula of I need, I want, I have to have. For thousands of years, we've been demanding more than our share of security. I want my house, I want my car, I want my mortgage, I want money. Prestige, what do they think about me? And here we go, girls, guys too. Girls look at it a little bit differently. And romance, yeah, they throw that right in with material stuff. Having a guy, having a gal, having a marriage, almost like having a car, having a, you know, romance. Romance! When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank still to drink for still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. It's that conversation that's going on in your mind that's making you feel, you know, that conversation that's going on in your mind? It's not about God. It's about stuff. It's about romance. It's about him. It's about her. It's about prestige. It's about security. That whole thing that, you know, your whole life making decisions, managing your life, choosing this and choosing that, thinking that you're free, that you're it's free choice, and it's all be dictated because it's because of the conversation in your mind that's all about this stuff that you're absolutely addicted to and you don't even know how to stop doing it. Some gal said to my wife, because she was worried about this stuff, she said, well, just stop worrying about it. Just anybody ever tell you that? But just don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Yeah, how do you do that? You know, I wish I could. Just don't think about it. Well, we're 6 months behind the mortgage and the loss of it. Hey, don't let it bother you. You know? Wow. Then it says here, it says, for us, the gaining of a new perspective. What's the new perspective? New way of thinking or non-thinking. We learn it slowly in here, don't we? One day at a time. For us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. What got you in here? Did you get in here because you got a raise? You're riding the crest? Things were going great? So you said, well, I just won the lottery. I wonder what they're doing down in AA. I think I'll try that. No, you got in here because you're the best move you ever did in your life to save your ass. You came in here and picked up a white chip because you were crushed. Listen, don't anybody come in here and tell me this was their idea. Even if it was their idea, it's bullshit. It was their idea where they had no other options. You know what I mean? Everybody comes in here with a gun to the head. This is like the last place you want to be. This is the last place you want to stay. This is the last place you want to hang out. For us, the process of gaining new perspective was unbelievably painful. You know how it says in the AA literature? It says, many of us have hung on to our old ideas and the result was what? Is it 5%? 10%? 100%? 90%? Sort of seems unfair, right? Seems like it doesn't make any sense. Seems to me, like if like 5% of the time I'm thinking about God and 95% of the time I'm thinking about the new Mercedes, I should get at least a 5% deal on that. You know what I mean? You know what it says? Many of us have hung on to our old ideas and the result was nil. Now, nil may show up in 10 years. Nil can show up in 15 years. Nil can show up. Why did that guy drink? Who knows when nil shows up? The result was nil until we let go what? Absolutely. Right? For us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. Hey, listen, you're going to hang around AA? You better get used to the pain. You better get used to the suffering. This is all about, hey, you know something? Before I came to AA, I had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Unbelievable fun. And I felt shitty. Now I'm in AA. I have no fun at all. I don't even know how to fun. I don't even want to have fun. I don't even know how to do fun. Fun scares me, but I feel good. I don't even know how to explain that deal. Other people are having fun. I'm not having fun. You know, it says right here. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency, we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. The last thing I want to give you in here is right out of this book. It says, the improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Hello? You know what you guys are all about? Not you guys. I'm talking about the car room guys. You're all about coming in here and complaining and whining and talking to your sponsor about your life and your problems and how to get out of them. And how you can get out of them. And how you can somehow avoid the pain. Your whole life is about avoiding the pain. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as a plague. Drinking is part of running from pains and problems. Taking dope is running from pains and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it didn't appeal to us. So here's the question. And this is how it all ties in. So if that's true, if everybody in the, let me tell you something, I've had cancer, I've been broke, I've been foreclosed on, I've had people sick in my family, my mother's died on, I mean, you know, people, let me tell you something, if you're alive on the planet Earth, shit's gonna happen to you.